Better than this, I don't know what I'm doing. I can't do this shit.
What's better than this? Guys being dudes here on the Draft Dudes podcast, presented by Locked On. It's Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs from the Draft Network, and we are your hosts here on this edition of the show. I think it's Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you caught yourself.
We're going to talk some more about the NFC South. It's the Falcons and the Bucks today. Kyle, we've got some news, though. We've got news from the NFL that we know the locations for three of the next four drafts.
Yeah, we got Vegas, which we knew.
Yeah.
And then we've got Cleveland.
Oh, yeah. Pumped.
To be announced.
Great location.
And then Kansas City.
Going to eat food. Ribs. Eat
ribs. Yeah, say good
barbecue. I don't know much about Kansas City or the wonderful state of Missouri, but I look forward to checking it out and mostly checking out the famous ribs.
We're expecting a big city in 2022, right?
Well, I hope it's not London.
I can't imagine it'll be London.
$133 million just went to the city of Nashville. You think we're going to move that to Europe?
No. That is going to go to Los Angeles, though.
I'm hoping for somewhere in the Southeast, you know, where actually the players that get drafted play their college football. So, you know, Atlanta, Charlotte, somewhere in Florida. You know, I think that would be.
No, that's bullshit for you, man. You should want to travel.
I'm going to travel plenty here. Plenty of travel.
But you should want to tour the globe.
I do. But for the NFL draft, I think at some point in its history of not being in New York City, they should have it in the actual deep South East. But I digress. You know, Kyle, we're going to be talking about each one of those drafts here on the Draft Dudes podcast. So make sure that you subscribe to this podcast by using the brand new podcasting app, Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And when you get into your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Draft Dudes.
Ready to get weird?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Joe mentioned we're talking about the Falcons and Bucks on today's show. So if you're fans of specific teams, you know, we understand maybe not all of this content is relevant for you or you might not enjoy this. So apologies in advance. So anybody who's not Bucks and Falcons fans, you'll probably actually enjoy today's show. It's kind of the heel turn that I've been building up here. Joe, the Falcons got one of my top 200 players in this year's class.
But they got your interior offensive lineman number one, right?
It's true. They did. But they also got no other players in the top 200.
Yeah. So let's start off on a good note. Talk about Mr. Chris Lindstrom.
Yeah, we have to, right? Lindstrom's so rock solid. As far as I think he's pretty scheme diverse. And you consider putting him into this interior offensive line, and really the whole offense is going to hum around being able to stay balanced with rush and pass and keeping Matt Ryan clean. And Chris Lindstrom getting plugged into this interior offensive line, I think, immediately upgrades the entire offense because it allows Matt Ryan to perform better. It is an upgrade in the run game with the run blocking. He's an all-around player. The only reason he's there at 14 is positional value. He was my 18th rated player in this draft class, and I loved what the Falcons did with that draft selection right there. They had a really strong start to their draft class by taking a fairly quote-unquote safe player, in my opinion, Chris Lindstrom.
Oh, yeah, he's going to be so good, right? I mean, that BC offense has been really good running the football, and Chris Lindstrom is a big reason why, man. I love him in space, just as good as he is moving bodies in the line of scrimmage. But if you're looking for a guy that can hit those longer poles, lead off tackle, and really be consistent, man, I love him in that role. And then he pass blocks so well. I mean, he's got that background of playing tackle early on in his career, and he moves so well and mirrors so well and frames guys so well. that I just could not imagine a scenario where he's not a really good offensive lineman for a long time to come. And obviously a big need there at right guard, and really the entire right side of this offensive line was upgraded. They trade back into the first round, and they
did they though?
Well, we're going to get into that. They took they're going to take Caleb McGarry, who I have 102 overall, which I think might be 100 spots higher than you. I have my concerns with McGarry, mostly just I think he's so sloppy in pass pro, and you know I think he's got an entire overhaul and ahead of him in terms of the footwork that he puts together to really win and set those roadblocks up the arc. I don't like the way that at least watching his college tape that he approaches pass blocking, and that's going to be something that's going to have to be fine-tuned. But if you're looking for a good athlete, if you're looking for a guy with some power, with an edge that'll move some bodies, you get that in McGarry. He just has a ton of technical work to do with that pass pro footwork, and they're going to need him to catch on quick, because there's no real other options here. I mean, Ty Sombrello, you like him better as a backup, but McGarry, they traded back into the first round. He's expected to start.
Yeah, so McGarry for me was kind of in the same stratosphere as where I held Brian O'Neill last year coming out of Pittsburgh. We went in the second round to Minnesota. O'Neill actually outperformed my expectations this past year for the Vikings. I believe O'Neill graded favorably in PFF. I think he gave up close to 30 pressures, even though he didn't give up any sacks for Minnesota, at least towards the end of the year. I believe he gave up 30 pressures in pass protection. And honestly, that's better than what I expected. So is there a pathway there for Caleb McGarry to be a good football player? Yes, absolutely. You know, he's drafted on the upside and the potential, and the functional athleticism that he brings is terrific. But Joe, as you said, from a technical perspective, much like Brian O'Neill, who was originally a tight end and transferred in and or kicked inside to play offensive tackle and keep his hand in the dirt permanently, there's a lot of raw, rough around the edges type reps with McGarry. And pass pro, the feet are really out of sync, and I didn't think he framed blocks particularly well. I thought even in the run game, you know, he's so athletic, he can get into favorable positions, but I think he didn't think he sustained positioning with a lot of consistency. So especially when you start to consider some of the other offensive line, like let's go out and draft a right tackle to play next to Chris Lindstrom. You could have had Juwan Taylor, Dalton Risner. I know we're beating the horse down Cody here because Cody Ford, we talk about this, yeah. It seems like every day on the show about how these guys were there in the mid-30s, but my goodness gracious, you need each one of those guys, I think, would have been an immense upgrade as far as plug and play. Maybe not necessarily the long-term potential, but if I'm a team like the Falcons, I don't want guys that I'm going to have to develop for 2 or 3 years before I feel like they're at a place where they're a quality starter, which is what I think Caleb McGarry's facing. Now, could he surprise me? Absolutely. Wouldn't be the first time I'm wrong on an athletic offensive lineman. But as I'm doing my risk assessment of McGarry as a football player, that's a really ambitious pick to trade up and pick and spend a first-round pick on Caleb McGarry.
I agree with you. Now, shifting gears to – that was it. That's all they did on day one and day two with the trade-up. And then they had I don't even know what you call this haul on day three. Is there anything? I mean, I'm looking
dumpster
over
fire.
Yeah, I mean, like, are any of these players going to sign a second deal with Atlanta? I mean, I struggle to find, you know, how these players are going to help them. I mean, really raw players. I mean, I think the best thing they did maybe was Kadri Olsen.
It is. Yeah, I agree with you.
And he's like a seventh round caliber running back who they took in the fifth round. I mean, he was a big reason why Pitt won the ACC Coastal Division this year, which I'm not sure that's anything to really brag about, given how down that entire group is. But him and Darren Hall did some really good things for Pitt and put themselves in position to play for the ACC title. And obviously they got rocked by Clemson. But
we were there. We saw that.
We were there in the rain.
Good time. Yeah.
Twas. It was Colton. Christian Wilkins was fun in that game, wasn't he? Yeah, so like he gives him that power back, right? Like if you're looking for a downhill guy, he can move pretty well for his size. He does catch the football. He's like average across the board with some interesting power, but limited in terms of his elusive skills. But, you know, John Kaminsky, is he going to be rosterable? I know he's got some athletic traits, but at the Senior Bowl, he didn't look like he belonged. Sheffield's been getting burnt in coverage for years at Ohio State. Like, what do you make of this day three, man?
There's nothing here, I'm going to be completely honest. Like, Olsen's probably RB3 on the roster behind Devonta Freeman and Ito Smith. And I understand they lost Tevin Coleman, but you're not drafting Quadri Olsen to be Tevin Coleman's replacement. Those are very different skill sets. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. Totally different.
So then I look at the cornerbacks, the defensive backs that they took. They took Kendall Sheffield and they took Jordan Miller. Both of these guys are super tiny, don't tackle well, and they're fast. So you just exclusively drafted speed in the secondary. And Jordan Miller has some injury concerns as well. He's had some durability issues. Marcus Green from Louisiana Monroe. Maybe special teams kind of guy, but I mean, you look at this Falcons depth chart at wide receiver with Julio and Sanu and Calvin Ridley, and then you get down to like guys who, you know, wide receiver four, wide receiver five, guys that need to play special teams. They got Russell Gage as a sixth round pick on this roster last year. It was a super fun kind of gadgety special teams, you know, very good kick coverage. They signed Olamide Zaccheaus as a undrafted free agent who I actually, you know, liked a fair amount. So
where's the help on the interior defensive line?
John Kaminsky, Joe.
Come on now. I mean, that can't be real. That can't be a real answer. Right now, they got Grady Jarrett and a contract year and Deidrin Sanat, who I think is a quality rotational type player.
They got Tyler Davidson from New Orleans.
All right. So we got another
free agency.
They got Rashid Hageman. Is he going to put it all together finally? Yeah. What are we doing here, man?
Yeah, this draft class, I think, really missed the mark, to be completely transparent. And it's not even like there were bad football players available. They picked 111 and 135 in the fourth round and came away with guys that I had ranked 243 and 336. Olsen, I had 212, best value pick that they got on day three, and they picked him at 152. Mm. Just an abysmal. Everything after Chris Lindstrom, I to be honest, I hated, and I don't like putting draft classes through the ringer.
Right,
like that.
Right.
You know, I mean, you try and appreciate the thought process of the teams and the fits, and not marry yourself to your rankings of the players. But I thought every single player that they took after Chris Lindstrom was a bad football player.
Yeesh. Okay. Well, maybe we have better things to say about the Bucks.
Sure. Yeah.
Come on. This is a better group. This is a better group.
It's a better class than Atlanta. Yeah.
Devin White, obviously the headliner there, the top five linebacker. Linebackers go in the first round, folks. Look at it the last couple of years. And look at the money CJ Mosley got. So get it in your head. Linebackers are perfectly fine to be drafted in the first round as early as the top five. Devin White, I mean, this team has been crippled by its defense for the last several years. They've been able to move the ball just fine on offense. But defense, they can't stop anyone. They got themselves a true field general. The guy that can be the quarterback of their defense in Devin White has all the physical ability that you're looking for in terms of both size and athletic skills. He's a super urgent football player, plays with a ton of energy, a high motor. Yeah, he's got to clean up some processing stuff and get a little bit more consistent with his finishing. But, I mean, he's got blue chip traits. It's that simple. And, you know, they had a big need here at linebacker. And, you know, maybe I would have argued for the interior defensive lineman, especially now that we know Gerald McCoy has been cut and those types of things. But I can get behind this pick, even at the top five.
Thank goodness they went this direction. Imagine if they would have taken like Ed Oliver and then Kendall Beckwith goes down.
Yeah.
And your linebackers would be Kevin Minter and I guess Deion Buchanan.
As long as they went to LSU, linebacker. Right? You can play linebacker for the Bucs. That's right. The only thing you have to do.
I'll tell you what, Todd Bowles gets the most out of LSU kids.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
He's got a great little track record there. So that marriage makes a ton of sense. Bunting at 39, was okay. I was a little bit lower on Bunting than some of the consensus. I thought he was a scheme-specific starter, but with that said, this is one of those environments that I see being a favorable scheme for Sean Bunting. So did I love it at 39? No, but I understand it. And I'm not going to hammer that pick. Their next corner pick is a different story, but we'll get there in just a second. So looking at Tampa's back end now, their secondary, you know, Carlton Davis had a pretty strong year last year from what I had seen. Drafting Sean Bunting now allows you to get guys that are kind of cut from the same cloth playing at both sides on the outside. And you're really solidifying the Vernon Hargraves, provided he gets his mind right to practice, as Bruce Arians said, I believe it was last week when he didn't participate in OTAs. It can be your full-time nickel where he's not exposed to some of the physicality issues that have really plagued him for his entire career after being a first-round pick. And it bumps MJ Stewart further down the depth chart. And Joe, that was needed because from all early returns on MJ Stewart and folks connected to the Tampa regime and organization, that MJ Stewart pick sounds like a total flop. So this, I like the waterfall effect that this builds for Tampa in their corners.
You know, this is interesting. I know that you've connected a lot of parallels between your personal draft board and where players were picked. Sean Bunting was my 39th player. They took him 39. Hey. And Mike Edwards was my 99th player. And that's exactly where Tampa Bay took him, number 99. And if I look at this class, you know, I'm good with White. At five, I'm good with Bunting at 39. The other pick that I really like is Mike Edwards. Safety for them. You know, he was such an important piece of a really good Kentucky defense, this past year. But he's a four-year starter over there, and he's renowned for his leadership qualities. And I think that's kind of one of the deals here with this Tampa defense is getting guys that are going to be tone setters, leaders, guys that are going to hold people accountable. And they get that in Mike Edwards. And I think he kind of checks all the boxes. You know, I mean, he can cover. He can play closer to the line of scrimmage. I like him in zones. I think he's got ball skills. He tackles. He's got a good processing skills. So I think that across the board, you get a pretty solid safety here and a guy that I think can be a pretty early starter for a guy they took in the late third round.
I got a hot take.
Okay.
Mike Edwards is the best safety on this roster.
So they have Justin Evans, Kentrell Bryce, Jordan Whitehead. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. I think that's good.
Like pretty easily. In my opinion. I know Evans has got explosiveness, but the tackling issues have been an issue for him since Texas A&M.
Yeah. And man, they got a billion young safeties, huh?
Their entire secondary is super young.
Yeah. I got to get that together. I'm with you. I think Mike Edwards will be the best safety on this roster this year.
I think Edwards and Whitehead are the best two safeties on the roster.
I like how those guys complement each other too.
I agree. You know, there's a lot of physicality, even with Justin Evans. I know the tackling issues aside, like, range. You got to come to balance, dude. But the range there is a nice compliment. So they got some nice sub package potential, especially when you consider Devin White and Levante David are athletic linebackers too. Speed. So if you want to put three safeties on the field with Evans, Whitehead, and Evans or Edwards, and then keep David and White on the field, you know your back five in the middle of the field can actually be pretty athletic. So I like some of the potential that you've got there. Jameel Dean, why?
He's big and fast.
He's big and fast. This is such a dumb pick. I'm sorry. Tampa Bay doubling down on corners on day two with all three, right? All three of their day two picks being in the secondary. The Jameel Dean pick for me is so redundant. I understand that there's no such thing as too many corners in the NFL, but he's so far off, in my opinion, as far as his readiness to step onto an NFL field and have anticipatory qualities and challenging the football and staying attached to bodies. And he's going to exclusively be a deep third cover three corner that I don't think has the twitch to explode and get involved in stuff happening in front of his face. He's very linear. I think his transitions are super sloppy. big time project pick. I would not have drafted Jamil Dean in this year's class, and they took him at 94. So a very ambitious pick there, especially when you consider, you know, you got done kind of comparing and contrasting the picks that Tampa made the rest of the way. And I had Devin White 10, he went 5. Jamil or Sean Bunting went 39. I had him 69, but again, it was a scheme specific starter. So if I put that filter on it, I'm on board with that pick. And I, like I said, I like the complementary values that it brings. Mike Edwards, I had 91st, he went 99th. Anthony Nelson, 107, I had him 121. So they got pretty appropriate value up and down through the first four rounds, with the exception of the Jamil Dean pick, which just made me pull my hair out because it felt so redundant with Carlton Davis there and Sean Bunting you just took. Would have loved to have seen maybe some address of the pass rush situation. Another opportunity there. You know, you got Carl Nassib. We don't know what the situation is with Jason Pierre-Paul. Noah Spence, who's been, you know, extremely underwhelming. William Golston, and then they obviously drafted Anthony Nelson in the fourth round. So you could have had another opportunity to target potentially another pass rusher and really help your team much more in 2019. And when you consider you've got Bruce Arians there, mm-hmm. who's retired, what, twice now? His shelf life as a coach is not going to be very long. So you understand with Bruce Arians here, they want to win right now. That's why you see them being so aggressive and cutting Gerald McCoy and then signing – and Dominican Sue, and I just – that one really surprised me because it's a top 100 pick on a guy that I think is a project player when the rest of your approach this offseason has been, let's get ready to win right now.
This Jamil Dean pick has rubbed you more wrong than any pick that we've discussed in however long we've been doing this. And this is like the Jordan Scarlett pick for me is the one that I just can't do. Yeah. This,
I can't wrap my head around it.
You've been struggling for weeks on it, man, since it happened. Well,
tell me where I'm wrong.
I'm not going to tell you where you're wrong. I just think
philosophically, it flies completely in the face of everything else that they've done this offseason.
Yeah. 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 Anthony Nelson's interesting. You know, Ty Bowles has been different in how he gets pressure off the edge. And I mean, Nelson tested really well for his size, and he has some unique moments on tape where you see a guy that's 6'7" somehow flatten in corner in a way that you'd expect a guy, you know, 3 inches shorter and 50 pounds less to be able to do. So he's interesting. I like his developmental upside. It's interesting to think about how he fits on this defense, but obviously edge rusher is a big need. I know they gave Shaq Barrett a contract, and Jason Pierre-Paul can't stop getting injured, not playing football. So,
yikes.
He might have a bigger role right away than maybe we thought when he was drafted.
Yeah. Has anyone checked in on Trevor? Trevor hated this class, man.
Oh, especially he hated the kicker pick. Yep. How do you hate the kicker pick if you're a Bucs guy? They've had problems there for a long time.
Because the last time they drafted a kicker, blew up in their face.
In the second, it's different, though. It did in the second.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
I'm all about day three specialists, man. People are super against it. I did a spot with the UK Browns podcast a couple of weeks ago, and they were like all upset that they drafted Austin Seibert, the kicker from Oklahoma. And the only rationale was, he's a kicker. Well, okay. Kickers are important. Whether you like it or not, they're important. If you can get a good one and it means you drafted them in the fifth round, so be it.
Right. What are the odds of a position player making your roster in the fifth round versus a specialist that gets drafted in the fifth round?
Get the kick.
You know you're getting a rosterable guy.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, at least.
Yeah.
There are other two remaining picks, Scott Miller, wide receiver from Bowling Green, Terry Beckner from Missouri. I like Beckner a little bit, Joe. I thought he was a fun player at Missouri. He's been beaten down a little bit with some injuries, really cost him some explosiveness. But that Missouri scheme really encourages guys to play free and be aggressive. And I think if you can get Terry Beckner in a rotational role where he's asked and tasked to play aggressive and play in a penetration role, then you'd be a rotational player at the next level. So I think that's actually a very admirable pick for the Bucs, provided he's able to stay healthy with a 7th round selection at 215.
Got to rank them, right? Got to rank these classes in this.
We got to rank them.
All right.
It's pretty easy, in my opinion.
Okay, so we've started at the bottom previously.
Started at the bottom that way, yeah.
So the first has got to be the Saints, right?
Saints are first and Falcons are last.
Yeah.
No question.
Yeah, that's non-debatable. So is it the sorting out 2-3 between Carolina and Tampa?
Our two nemesis picks, Scarlett and Streamfield.
I'm going with Tampa at number two. I think there's I can look at this class and I feel better about how it helps this football team this year.
I disagree. I think the Dean pick ruins it for me.
Can we fight about this? Let's fight about this real quick. Let's call White and Burns a wash, right?
Sure.
They're both going to help their football team a ton.
Sure.
Okay, so Bunting and Little. I don't think Little's going to be of quality left tackle.
I'm just looking at the rankings, man.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think he's going to be asked to be a starter, though, too. So you know he's going to start. Bunting, you know, is going to start.
I like Bunting as a corner better than I do Little as a tackle.
Sure.
Greer's not going to play. Jamel Dean sucks.
But Greer gives you more long-term value, I think. Backup quarterback. And based on the way Cam's been going, Will play at some point.
I think the Bucs had a better class.
Well, I'm just not going to get into a pissing contest with you over the merits of a backup quarterback at pick 100. And then they got Christian Miller at 85.
Are you a believer in drafting backup quarterbacks?
What's that?
Do you believe in drafting backup quarterbacks?
If it's at 100, I'm fine.
Okay.
If you don't trade up for him and he's not CJ Beathard.
Ryan Finley.
Yeah, right. I had him 199. He got picked 100. I'm fine with that value. I understand that there's some economic thought process that, you know, if you're going to draft a quarterback, you either take him in the first round. And if you're not going to trade him in the first round, why would you waste a day two pick on him? But it was like the third from last pick in day two. If they had where's an early third round pick in this class? Nobody picked in the third round in this division? Jesus Christ. The only third round picks were 94, 99, and 100 in this entire class.
Well,
in this division.
That's how it goes.
If you had picked 66, right? That's where Pittsburgh picked Deontay Johnson. If you picked Will Greer at 66, I probably don't like the pick. But you're at the end of the round.
Do you think Mike Edwards will help the Bucs more than Will Greer will help the Panthers?
I mean, why do I have to play it that way? Why do I have to go pick for pick? Why can't I just look at the total body of the class?
Okay, so when I look at the total body of the class for the Bucs, I got, I think, a face of the franchise type linebacker. I got what I think is a starting corner in Bunting. We can throw
now up. Stop right there.
Okay.
Now stop right there.
All right.
Because I get a face of the franchise pass rusher in Brian Burns, who I like better as a football player, and I get starting left tackle in Greg Little. So we're called a wash. So
I don't think Greg Little's a starting left tackle, a quality one.
That's what it comes down to.
You don't either.
Okay, and then Jamil Dean?
Trash.
I agree.
But at least it's at 94 and not 37.
Carolina wasted their pick at 154. They didn't waste their pick at 94.
They traded one of their third-round picks to move up for Greg Little. They have two day-two picks invested in Greg Little.
Okay. What did you have him ranked?
Little?
Yeah, I had him 111, which is not great value, but I think he will be a left tackle.
157.
Okay, so that's part of the reason.
Yeah.
Joe hates Greg Little.
At 37, when you traded your second and third round picks to move up for him, yeah, I hate it.
Yeah, but you can't don't play that game. They got a pick back, so don't say that they traded the second and the third.
But
they just moved up in the second. They got this. It's not they didn't give them both away to trade for a player. They got the second back.
If they would have sat there, if they would have drafted him at wherever they picked in the 40s originally, I would have criticized it just as much.
But fine.
It's worse that they gave up the third to move up.
See, that's much better verbiage.
All right.
That's more fair to Carolina. I disagree. But we're wrapping this up, Joe. We can't do this all day.
I will.
We got to record tomorrow's podcast.
But the Bucks are two for me.
Panthers are two for me. Bucks are three.
Bad.
They're close. I'm not going to sit here and say, I mean, it's just Carolina didn't waste an earlier pick. That's all.
But they did.
Could you stop? I'm trying to roll the close here,
Joe. I know, but you can't take those digs at the end there.
At least typically, we you're pretty typically, you're pretty passive.
At least we would have wasted. We didn't waste. We wasted 94. Yeah.
94 is not good.
Wrap.
Top 100 pick.
Close the podcast.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and close the podcast. If you guys want to listen to Joe and I bicker back and forth like a married couple, you can hit subscribe on the podcast. You can do so on the brand new Himalaya app. And once you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play the Draft Dudes podcast. It'll play it right there for you. So that way you can enjoy some hands-free listening of the dudes if you guys are on the go. You can also hit subscribe on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast resource is. But we definitely recommend you check out the Himalaya app. It's new and it's pretty cool. So come back tomorrow. We're going to start recording for the AFC West, our last division. We're going to give ourselves the run through before we put a bow on the 2019 NFL Draft. Kyle Krabs at Grinding Tape with Joe Marino at the Joe Marino. Thanks as always for listening to the Draft Dudes podcast.